Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It was just last week that iconic singer, entertainer, Stevie Wonder announced during a concert that he would soon receive a kidney transplant. That surprising news has reinvigorated the push to get more minorities to register as kidney donors. And tonight, we're talking about the struggle that still exists for so many who need kidney transplants and what you can do about it. My guests are Dr. Clive Callender, he's a Howard University hospital transplant surgeon, and Glenda Roberts, kidney transplant recipient and director of external relations and patient engagement for the Kidney Research Institute. We're talking about this tonight. If you have a question about kidney donations, about possibly being a kidney recipient, anything having to do with the health of your kidneys, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Callender, good to see you again.
Nice to be seen.
Absolutely.
Been around a long time now.
Yeah, but and you still look good.
Thank you.
Good. Glenda, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. Dr. Callender, I want to start with you. Even before we get into some of the particulars about donations and the surgical specifics, if someone is born with two healthy kidneys as, you know, as a child, and they continue to, you know, to grow up as an adult, what is it that might cause them to need a kidney transplant? What would cause a kidney to fail?
The two most common causes are diabetes and hypertension, high blood pressure.
Okay. Why is that?
It's interesting to find out that after the age of 12, African-Americans begin to have high blood pressure. And high blood pressure damages the kidneys and actually destroys them. This can be prevented if they take blood pressure medicine. But if they don't even know they have it and they don't get their blood pressure checked, then by the time they find out what's going on, it may be too late and the kidneys may already be destroyed. If you have diabetes, if the blood sugars are not controlled, they damage the blood vessels, which damage the kidneys. And so those are the number one, number two causes of kidney disease in the United States.
What does the kidney do?
Oh, the kidney is the purifier of the blood. So that when you urinate, and so you're doing something wonderful. You're eliminating the toxins and the poisons that are in the body. And so when they stop functioning, the poisons accumulate and damage every organ system in your body.
I thought livers did that.
You're very wise, because liver is a chemical factory that does eliminate some of the issues, but it doesn't eliminate the blood, urea, nitrogen, and creatinine, which are consequences of the breakdown of muscles and protein. Mm-hmm. So the liver works on many things, but it doesn't work on the products of breakdown of metabolism of protein, which give you, elevate your BUN and your creatinine, and also your potassium. And if they get too high, they can kill you.
So you have two kidneys. If one of them fails, how long can you function without, with just one?
Forever. So one kidney is all you need to live. And that's one of the nice things about a paired organ like the kidney. So that's why somebody can be a live donor. Because all you need to live, some people are born with one kidney. Mm. And that's all you really need.
Glenda, talk to me about your journey regarding your kidney health and the transplant. Tell me the story.
I was originally diagnosed with kidney disease when I graduated from college. Back in the day, you always had to get a physical before you could get a job. And I had turned down a very lucrative job from Los Alamos to go to work for one of the oil companies. And just before I was about to start, they called me and said, "We can't hire you because you're sick." I said, "I'm not sick." They said, "Yes, you are." They said, "You have kidney disease." So my mother took me to a urologist at the time because we didn't know about a nephrologist. And he was able to do an exam, and he wasn't able to duplicate the results. And he wrote a letter to the oil company and said, "You should hire her." But before I left the office, he turned to me and he said, "And as soon as they hire you, you should go on dialysis." And I said, "What's dialysis?" And he explained it, but I didn't really, you know, I just graduated from college, so I knew everything. Let me preface it with that. Okay?
We all do when exactly. We graduate from college. My daughter hasn't graduated, and she knows everything.
She knows everything.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Well, and so I said to him, "Well, dialysis sounds tricky. Are there other options?" And he said, "You can try diet and exercise, but most people are not able to do that." And I said, "Why don't we go with that?" And for 40 years, I was able to slow the progression of my disease through diet and exercise. Now, I make that point because my brother was diagnosed at the same age, and he immediately went on dialysis. And he was on dialysis for some 44 years, which is very unusual because most people last 3 to 5 years once they go on dialysis. So it really is important to try and protect those kidneys and keep them working functionally. And most people do what I ultimately did, and that is crash into dialysis. Because the kidney, you don't feel sick when you have kidney disease generally, and you don't know that you need to do anything until your kidneys really fail. And so I went to the emergency room because we thought I had the flu, and they said, "You have a creatinine level of 17.
Wow.
Now, to put you in perspective, most people start getting ready for dialysis when they have a creatinine level of 5. So we had to do some emergency procedures in order to put me on dialysis. The good news is that I was able to experience in-center dialysis, where you go 3 to 4 times a week. And then I moved over to peritoneal dialysis, where your blood is cleaned overnight while you sleep. And fortunately, within that first year, I was actually able to get a transplant because I have an unusual blood type. And when they found an organ, they said, "Put her on the top of the list."
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about kidney transplants. We're talking about what it's like to receive a kidney transplant, what you can do to become a donor. And if you have any questions about the process, whether even dialysis, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kind of give me, Glenda, if you can, the dialysis 101. What is it like to have to do that? There are dialysis centers all over the place. And for those of us who aren't familiar, have never been inside one, what happens when you go on dialysis?
Well, it's an interesting experience. My experience in center was a very difficult experience that I think most people handle better than I did. What you find is when you go into the dialysis center, they sit you down in a chair, and they either connect to the catheter, if it was an emergency and you have one in your jugular, in your neck, or they connect to your arm, if you've had a chance to have a fistula put in.
A fistula? And what is a fistula?
Where they connect the veins and the arteries so that the dialysite can go in, the blood can come out, and it's all connected in a circuit. So that circuit is then connected to the external machine, and the dialysate cleans the blood, as Dr. Callender mentioned earlier, allowing you to keep the blood cells and the good proteins in and taking the toxins out. And you do that for a 4-hour period. And one of the things that's important about dialysis is you need to control your fluid intake while you're on dialysis. Otherwise, you have a really miserable experience, a lot of cramping in your legs and your feet. It's just a very, very uncomfortable experience. And after those 4 hours, 3 times a week, you find immediately afterwards most people are very nauseous and they feel very sick, anywhere from 3 hours to 9 hours. Of course, I always got the short end of the stick, so I would leave dialysis at 3:30, and I couldn't get out of bed until midnight.
Wow.
Now, when I transferred, if I can.
Sure.
When I transferred to peritoneal dialysis, that's where they actually put a tube in my stomach, and the dialysate was cleaned by the peritoneum, a sac in your stomach. And I was able to do that overnight while I slept. So it was a longer period. It was a much more gentle period. And I felt much better during the day. So it was easier to live a more normal, typical life.
So let me make sure I understand. When you talk about cleaning the blood, is this kind of like getting a transfusion with your own blood? Does it go back, or because I'm not sure I understand.
Actually, you make a good point, because what they do is they take your blood out of your body, they put it through this big machine, which removes the toxins, and then they put it back into your body, which is why, remember I said you have a fistula in your arm?
Exactly.
You have that closed circuit, so it takes it out one side and puts it back in the other side. And the thing that I tell people all the time, because they said, well, you're on dialysis, so you probably stop urinating. Everybody's different. I never stop urinating. So that meant that for the 4 hours that I was on dialysis, I couldn't go to the bathroom. That was a very miserable experience.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Gosh, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about kidney health, transplants, whether you are thinking about being a donor, whether you are a potential donor, whether you need a kidney transplant as a recipient. My guests are Dr. Clive Callender, Howard University Hospital transplant surgeon, and Glenda Roberts. She's a kidney transplant recipient. She's also with the Kidney Research Institute. If you have a comment or a question about this, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Of course, as always, we will be taking phone calls even after 7:30, and there will be resources for your consumption on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30 tonight. Dr. Callender, what is the process for someone who wants to become a donor?
Well, there's a registry, for example, for those people who just want to become a donor, to donate life, dc.org, to register as a donor. If you actually want to give an organ, that's another story, because then you need to go to the transplant center and to let them know, and then you have to go through diagnostic tests to determine that you're perfectly healthy and that you're organ you want to give is perfectly healthy. And if you pass all those tests, then they will identify that you are an acceptable donor.
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues that people don't understand is that there's a transplant waiting list for people who wait for deceased donors. And the problem is that the waiting time for deceased donors may be anywhere from 5 to 10 years.
Oh, my.
Whereas if you have a live donor, whether it's a relative or not, the wait may be 30 to 60 days. For example, Stevie Wonder is talking about having his transplant in September, which is about 60 days. And that's the time it takes to work up and make sure that the donor is acceptable. And also, if you just go on dialysis, Glenda made a comment about people who are on dialysis. The death rate for people who are on dialysis is almost 100 times that what it is for those people who, like Glenda, have received a transplant.
I need to take a break, and I'll let you finish your point. But when we come back, we are going to talk to Elliot calling from Suitland, Heather calling from Virginia. And if you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will take your phone calls at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about kidney health, kidney transplants, donors, and recipients. All the information that you need right here on this program. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141, in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about the struggle that still exists for so many people who need kidney transplants and what you can do about it. My guests are Dr. Clive Callender, Howard University Hospital transplant surgeon, and Glenda Roberts, kidney transplant recipient and director of external relations and patient engagement for the Kidney Research Institute. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go to the phones, I wanted Dr. Callender to finish his point. You were talking about preparing to go through the kidney transplant process.
Right, and they do tests to determine that you're healthy and that you're compatible with the person who's going to receive the kidney. That means you have a similar blood type, and the tests that determine whether you're compatible or not identify you as a compatible donor. So these things are done, and that's why it takes maybe about 3 to 6 weeks before the person who's a potential donor can become an actual donor. So if somebody is very sick and they can't wait, then you need a live donor. Now, one of the things that's happened through time is that African Americans now donate, they're the number one ethnic group donor for deceased donors. But that's not true for live donors. And that's why we've got to work a lot to improve African-American live donation rates. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we actually have a National Minority Donor Awareness Week coming up the first week in August.
Okay.
And it's time for us to we've done what people said couldn't be done. We're now number one in terms of donating deceased organs. But now we need to get to the top of live donors, because that saves a lot more lives, and people who are not going to live 5 to 10 years, I need that.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Heather, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Heather. What's on your mind?
Hi, I had called in because the guest was saying about the 3 to 5 years for someone on dialysis. I happen to have been on dialysis for 17 years. I have a ultra-rare genetic disease that caused my kidneys to fail, but it depends on, you know, how diligent you are and what you do. I actually finished college while on dialysis. I started at the age of 21. I graduated with my bachelor's degree. I maintained a very healthy life. I went skiing. I went to Europe, done many things. I received 3 kidney transplants because of the genetic disease that they did not know about back then in the 80s. The first two I received, one from my younger brother, did not work. Only worked for 6 months, and then I received one from a cadaver, which we call angels, which did not last as well. But then when they found out about my rare disease, I then received one from my sister, and I've had that kidney transplant for 14 years.
Excellent. Wow. Okay. Your thoughts about that, Glenda?
I think the caller makes an excellent point. One of the things we have found at the Kidney Research Institute is that African Americans survive longer on dialysis than other groups do. And while we represent roughly 40% of the people who are on dialysis, we tend to live, African Americans, tend to live a lot longer. So your caller is right on point as it relates to that. But in general, when you put in all the people from all the different ethnic racial groups, on average, they last 3 to 5 years. Now, a lot of those people are older, so people might argue that, well, they were probably going to pass away sooner. But, you know, people in their early 60s that go on dialysis, in theory, they might have another 20 good years and without the disease. But once they go on dialysis, they tend to shorter lifespan. One of the things that we're trying to do here at the Kidney Research Institute is to try and understand what the causes are of the different diseases. You heard the doctor mention hypertension and diabetes as a cause of kidney disease. Your caller mentioned genetics. And those are sort of the top three reasons. The other thing that people experience is acute kidney injury, so that they're in a major accident or they get a bunch of bad drugs and it causes their kidneys to fail. But what we're finding in our research is that rather than just being 5 or 6 different kinds of kidney disease, we believe that there are probably 100 different types of kidney disease. And so we're doing research to try and understand what those types are, what medications are available that they respond positively to, and what unique novel therapies we need to develop for those individuals.
Okay. Thank you, Heather. You wanted to say something, Dr. Callender?
Yeah, I was going to say that on average, the mortality rate on dialysis is about 10% per year.
Mm-hmm.
So that as she mentioned, because dialysis has improved, a number of patients now are living for longer than 10 years and going between 10 and 20 years.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Elliot calling from Suitland. Thanks for calling, Elliot. What's on your mind?
Where I am a recipient of a kidney transplant 3 years ago. I was diagnosed with kidney failure 3 years ago, and there was a little twist to my situation, though, because I had hepatitis C.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was that I received a kidney from a deceased person that had hep C.
Mm-hmm.
In turn with that, my hep C was cured. I like I said, I'm within 3 years of after having the transplant, and I'm doing well. I'm feeling fine and everything. But like I said, they cured my hep C, and everything is fine now.
Okay. You know? Well, I'm glad to hear that, Elliot. Thanks for sharing that with us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Are there some blood types that are more difficult to match than others?
Yes. For example, the AB person is the ideal recipient because they can receive kidneys from anyone.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, somebody who's O is going to have a problem. A B is an A as well, but the best person is somebody like maybe Glenda fits that category. I don't know, but the person who's AB can accept organs from anyone.
How?
Actually, I'm type O, and that was one of their concerns. I'm a universal donor,
donor
so
but
that
not
anybody
recipient.
Could take my kidney,
right.
But I could only get it from another
right.
type O.
That's right.
So what was the surgery like for you, Glenda? What did you have to do to prepare? How long did it take? And how did you feel over the recovery period?
Well, unlike the description that Dr. Callender gave, here at the University of Washington, it took about 9 months to get through all of the various tests to make sure that I was a good candidate for a transplant. They called me, and I was really fortunate. Most people get a call, and then they're told to go home because there's somebody in line ahead of them. But because I was type O, and they had been looking for a while for somebody that would match me, I was able to get a transplant on the first call. They took me into the hospital. They had me do a special shower, and then they took me down to surgery. They put me to sleep. They did the surgery. It took about, we went in about 2 o'clock in the morning. I came out again about 6:30 or 7. And, of course, when I woke up, I was a little sore. So it was difficult, you know, to get out of the bed to go to the bathroom. But they had me up and walking at the end of the first day. And by the time I left the hospital 7 days later, I was walking all over the hospital to just, you know, get myself back in good physical shape.
When was your surgery?
So I responded pretty positively.
How long ago was your surgery?
December 2010.
2010. Okay, so we're talking about 9 years ago. You know, Dr. Callender, I remember you when you were here last and we were talking about this issue, you said that the procedure has changed dramatically over the past, 10 to 15 years. It's more efficient and the like. Talk to me about that.
Well, as she said, because of the fact that nowadays you may be able to get out of the hospital in less than 5 days if you have a good match and everything works out okay. But there are a lot of refinements. The drugs are different. The drugs are more powerful, stronger, and we're getting closer to tolerance, which is a situation that eventually you may not have to take many drugs at all. But these are things that are changing. However, the wait time here in the East Coast is still, for those who don't have a live donor, is usually from anywhere, especially in D.C., it's anywhere from 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Is the actual procedure more streamlined now than?
Yes, it is. Just as she said, nowadays a kidney transplant can take as short as 2 to 3 hours. Mm. Or it can take, in some cases, 4 hours. But more often than not, it's more like 2 to 3 hours because things have been refined. Mm. Yeah.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Raynell calling from Southeast D.C. Raynell, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, my question is, I know there's many different symptoms that come about when you're experiencing different things within your body. So to avoid going to the doctors, they checking you out, and nobody never comes up with anything, how can you specify, what kind of tests could you request for so you can make sure that your kidneys are doing okay?
Kidney screening of the urine. One of the first things to happen that changes is you get protein in your urine. And one of the most important things is if the doctor finds protein in the urine, to recognize that the comments that Glenda made become critically important, that diet and exercise and the right medication to keep your blood pressure in check and your blood sugar in check may delay the onset of the kidney failure. And so, but the earliest test is a urine protein. That's the earliest sign that your kidneys are failing.
Okay. Raynell, thank you so much for your phone call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So during the recovery process, when you went home, what kind of issues did you have, if any, Glenda?
I was really blessed. I had no issues. We're incredibly compliant at my house. When I got kidney disease, everybody went on the kidney disease diet.
I see. Okay.
Okay, so we had no issues. But again, my husband designed a system so that we could track all of my medications, when I was supposed to take them, what I had taken, and when I had any side effects or adverse responses, so that when we went to the doctor, we could present the notebook and the doctor could literally see what medications I took and what happened in that time frame.
What medications did you take? How many were you required to take?
Well, when I first got my transplant, I was taking 30 different medications twice a day.
30? 30?
Yes, 30.
Oh,
you know,
Lord.
29, 30. But now, thankfully, I'm down to actually just about 7 or 8 pills and only about 5 or 6 different medications. So that is a dramatic improvement. And when people ask me about taking the medication, the thing that I remind them is you have to eat every day. So just think about this is, you know, this is your snack. This is just another meal that you take, and it is the thing that allows you to stay alive.
I want to talk to your husband. Dr. Callender, about those medications, because I think when, just like my reaction, some people may say, wow, 30?
Yeah, well, that has changed a lot now, and so one of the things that happens with transplantation is you have to kind of trick the immune system. So at the beginning, you give a lot of medications to overwhelm the immune system. And then as the immune system is affected, you have to take less and less medications. And now you probably wouldn't have to take 30. You take some, maybe more like 20, but still that's a lot.
Yeah,
but as she says, it's often a difference between life and death, and so most of the patients are willing to take that.
Absolutely, because like you said, the alternative is not a good one. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about donors. What happens to them after they've donated a kidney? Lines are still open, 202-319-7810, 202-319. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about kidney donations and transplants, what you need to do, what you need to know. Before I go back to my guests, I'm going to go to the phone lines again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Carolyn, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Carolyn. What's on your mind?
I just want to put it out there that there's a lot of kids that's on dialysis and needs kidneys. Because my daughter, a couple of years ago, she was diagnosed with kidney disease. And I was surprised when I went up there and seen babies, just a lot of kids. And she lasted for like 3 years on dialysis, and she passed away. But it is so important that we need to donate, because there's a lot of kids that need help.
Yeah, Carolyn, thank you for sharing that with us. And we are certainly, you know, all sorry for your loss. You know, Dr. Callender, you touched on that at the beginning of this conversation, where, you know, children over 12, in many cases, see these kinds of problems.
Right. And, you know, 22 people every day die because of the shortage of donors. And, it's, difficult to recognize that so many of our African-American youngsters are on dialysis, as she mentioned. And if you go to a dialysis unit, often you find the largest population is African-Americans and younger people.
Why younger people, though?
As I mentioned earlier, we get high blood pressure earlier. And then, of course, one of the things that Glenda talked about is there's a disease called FSGS, which is a disease that we have more than other people. So that with hypertension, diabetes, and then, of course, our new disease that's coming up as a big problem is obesity. And so all of those things result in us at a very younger age. Why we get it at a younger age than other ethnic groups, I'm not so sure. But one thing is clear is that her observation is a correct one, that in the dialysis units, you see a lot of younger African-Americans and a lot of African-Americans.
We spoke about people who, and Carolyn, again, thank you so much for sharing with us. We spoke about those people who have received kidney donations, but what about live donors? After the kidney is removed, what issues might they have to face from the moment they are revived after the surgery and long term?
Short term, there's pain the first day or two, and they may have to take some medications for a day, from 1 to 5 days. But after they recover from the surgery within a week or so, actually they don't have to have any special precautions, except that they need to be followed over time, because we who are African Americans are more likely to have kidney disease in the first place. So they then can, maybe 20 years from the time of donation, could come down with hypertension, diabetes, and kidney trouble themselves.
Would it be as a result of the surgery or just as a result of lifestyle or other factors?
As a result of diabetes, hypertension, and lifestyle, mm-hmm. obesity, and those kinds of things, FSGS, and those other kidney diseases that Glenda made reference to. And so an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I think that's what Glenda was talking about, and exercise, diet, and eating vegetables and fruit, and watching your weight. Those are things that really pay off in terms of keeping from having hypertension or diabetes and keeping from getting kidney disease.
Glenda,
and if I could interject.
Sure, go ahead.
Follow on to his point. You know, a lot of people do raise the issue, since African Americans are so likely to have kidney disease, they're reticent to be donors. And one of the things that we find is that with UNOS, if you have been a living donor and you subsequently get kidney disease, they move you to the top of the list.
That's
so
good.
We're not talking about a 5 or a 10 year wait. You are much higher on the list than you would have been otherwise. So we still encourage people to be living donors, because the system will respond promptly to your generous contribution.
So when you've spoken, Glenda, to people who are considering live donations, what is the biggest concern that they have?
The biggest concern that people usually have is, if I give you a kidney, what if I get kidney disease? What does that mean for me? And I always talk to them about being on the top of the list. And the other issue that they raise is, if I am a donor for you, what if my child needs an organ later on? I wouldn't be in a position to donate for them. But I think in terms of, and the other thing they raise is, what is this going to cost me? And the good thing about that is that the insurance pays for the surgery for the living donor. So you don't have to worry about that. Now, there are other expenses, to be transparent. For instance, if somebody from North Carolina wanted to be my living donor and I'm up in Seattle, they would incur the transportation costs to get from North Carolina to Seattle. But we have a number of different supportive organizations that will help people with those expenses. So don't let expenses be the barrier to giving a donor, giving an organ if you can, because we can help you with that.
As a matter of fact, I hate to say it on this radio station, but Donald Trump came up with a program to increase the incentives for those people who want to donate, so
Absolutely.
That they pay for the cost of it. So that some things that Trump is doing that are very good.
Well, we'll give credit where it's due, I guess.
And I have to second that. We happened to be at the signing of the executive order last week, and, you know, everybody was excited because they were going to be there for the signing of the executive order, and, you know, I'm old school. I'm like, I'm going to wait and see what they have to say. And I have to say that when I left there, I was excited as anyone else was. The goal is to have people be on out of in-center within 5 years, so that for all new people going on dialysis, they want them to be able to do at-home dialysis for 80% of those people within the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working on things at the Kidney Research Institute and the Center for Dialysis Innovation to help make that a reality.
Give me a little information, if you can, Glenda, about how people can find out more about becoming living donors, and where they can also find out information about the Kidney Research Institute, please.
Okay. You can become a living donor. There are OPOs all around the country that will allow you to sign up to be a living donor. If you know somebody that is on dialysis and they're looking for an organ, then tell them, and their local hospital or university will screen the individual. If you're not a perfect match, because that's one of the things we've always heard, that you need to be a perfect match. They now have these things called donor chain, so that if somebody wants to give me an organ, but they don't match with me, but they match with someone else, then the person that has a donor over here that they don't match with may be able to give the organ to me or to someone else. So it's like a chain of people, each person getting an organ, making somebody in that chain whole. And in terms of the Kidney Research Institute, you can go to kri.washington.org. And I encourage you to do that and contact me, because we have educational materials that discuss all of the things that we've talked about here. We have a comic book called Joe's Story. It talks about what is kidney disease, why did I get it, how does it affect me, what's next, what does it mean for dialysis, you know, who can be a donor, how do they go about matching the donors, what happens if I go on dialysis, what happens if I get a transplant. And we're doing this because we want to educate as many people as possible about kidney disease, because you never know where it's going to strike.
Real quick, because I've got about 20 seconds.
Community education and empowerment and what you're doing is so important, and you can't overemphasize the importance of getting the community involved so that they can become donors and take that next step.
And as I said before, the online links will be on our website on WHUR.com in about 30 minutes or so. Glenda Roberts and Dr. Clive Callender, thank you so much for talking to us. I really, really appreciate it. And Glenda, I wish you only continued good health.
Thank you so much.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, July 15th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.